From St. Mary's to Elizabethtown, Punxsutawney to Port Allegheny, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Republicans control both houses of the Pennsylvania General Assembly, but money from left-wing groups is flowing into the state in an effort to put Democrats in control. David Taylor is here to host a Capitol Watch look at that battle and the statewide row office races. And the activist Pennsylvania Supreme Court has once again legislated from the bench in changing the law governing the counting of mail-in ballots. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Southwestern Pennsylvania has been trending Republican for a number of years, and the GOP is picking up steam in terms of new voter registrations. The party is also winning over some converts from the ranks of Democratic elected officials. Fayette County District Attorney Rich Bauer and Sheriff James Custer have abandoned the Democratic Party and joined the Republican Party. Their switch attracted the attention of President Trump, who announced it during a campaign rally near Pittsburgh. Bauer and Custer's jump to the GOP comes just weeks after Sheriff James Elbert in neighboring Westmoreland County switched his party affiliation. All three indicated the Republican Party was more in line with their personal values. Concerns over the security of mail-in voting were heightened last week after a number of military ballots were found discarded in the trash. Luzerne County officials blamed the snafu on a temporary worker who had improperly opened the ballots. Current state law prohibits the opening of mail-in ballots until the close of voting on Election Day. Many county elected officials have asked the legislature to change the law to allow the opening, but not the counting, of mail-in ballots prior to Election Day to speed up the counting process. So far, lawmakers and Governor Wolf have been unable to agree on any such changes. Last week's presidential debate drew both campaigns to Pennsylvania. Vice President Mike Pence attended a debate watch party in Lancaster, while Democrat nominee Joe Biden included the state on a post-debate train tour. The appearances continue to highlight the importance of Pennsylvania's 22 electoral votes, which may be key to determining who will be the next president of the United States. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. All eyes, of course, are on the presidential race, but every seat in the State House of Representatives and half of the state Senate seats will be on the ballot as well. And outside forces are working hard to impact the outcome. Here to take a look at the battle for control of the General Assembly is our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Matthew Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. On this program, you've got your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, great to be with you.
Good to be with you, David.
And as always, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, great to be with you.
So glad to be back here, David. Thank you.
So October has arrived, and so we are staring down the barrel of the November election. And, of course, there's, you know, lots that people have heard about the slugfest for the White House. But, of course, we focus on state public policy and what happens in the General Assembly. And there's an awful lot of action coming down as to what the balance of power is going to be.
There sure is, David. This is a really important election year, and we'll probably get into some of this, why 2020 is so important. We have in Pennsylvania 228 legislative races. Most people don't realize how many House members we have or senators. There are 203 House members, 50 senators. All of the House seats are up for election, and half of the Senate seats are up. Then the other half will be up in 2022. But what makes this election season unique is that whoever controls the majority of the House and Senate in Pennsylvania will have the power of redrawing congressional district lines and legislative district lines that will be in place for the next 10 years. So five elections all the way through 2030 is what is at stake. And it's why, as we'll get into this, so much money is coming into Pennsylvania from outside, with Pennsylvania being still the keystone state. It is the path to the White House.
Right.
The last Democrat who won the White House without winning Pennsylvania was Harry Truman, 1948. So we're talking a very long time. Democrats need Pennsylvania, and there have only been two Republicans to win the White House without Pennsylvania since Abraham Lincoln. So the road to the White House comes through Pennsylvania, and who controls things at the state house level is important because that has an impact on national politics. It's why, as the fifth largest state, we are the biggest swing state in the nation, and all eyes are on us. And while we focus on the state level, we know that has a dramatic impact
right.
on everything going on at the national.
Right. The role that Pennsylvania plays in our national political life.
That's correct. And a lot is at stake here.
And of course, also as part of that, the balance of power in the U.S. House of Representatives, that, you know, with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court imposing their own gerrymander on the Pennsylvania's congressional map, that shed incumbents, it took some people out. And so the question now will be who will be at the table to draw the lines for, as you say, Matt, those future elections.
And that's going to determine a lot of things, because whoever draws the maps, I mean, people say, let's get the politics out of map drawing. Well, you simply can't. I mean, the reality is that map drawing and congressional legislative lines is political. It's inherently political process. So you're always going to have that. And that's why, frankly, you know, the Democrats want majority control as much as the Republicans. Everybody wants to be the ones holding that pen and drawing the maps.
And I do. And I just want to say this for the record. The map that was thrown out by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had been duly enacted by the state legislature and signed by the governor, and that you had
bipartisan support.
Where I was going. Okay. That map would not have been enacted had it not been for Democrat support. So yeah, it's an ugly process, but at the same time, at least when you have it just be nakedly political, you have accountability for the results.
Well, and public input as well. Like Matt said, it's a political process, and the political process is a public process. So there were hearings on those maps across several of them, I believe, across the state, and it was voted on by all of our representatives. So it was a political process, and it will be again.
And this is how you have a political process with accountability.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So, Matt, let's take the plunge. And also, just as a placeholder, even though there's no governor's race or U.S. Senate race, we do have three statewide executive posts that are going to be filled. But let's start with the lower chamber. Let's start with the Pennsylvania House.
Yeah. So the Pennsylvania House, 203 members. The current numbers are 109-93 Republican majority. There is one open seat that was a Republican seat. So in general, you could think of 110-93. That's where you get to your 203. What that means is that in order for Democrats to take the majority, they need to flip a net of 9 seats in the House.
Okay.
And they got halfway there towards their goal of flipping the House in 2018. In 2018, Republicans, I would say, were outpunching their weight with 121 members. So the Democrats were able to win 11 seats, probably the lowest hanging fruit in 2018. And now they're coming for the other 9 seats. And we saw a lot of outside money coming into Pennsylvania in 2018. I think we haven't seen anything yet. So if you're already tired of TV ads and mail in your mailbox, get ready. You might just want to crawl in bed and ignore all of those mediums.
And so let's, I guess this is a two-part approach. Who are the groups that are coming in from out of state to try to change the balance of power, and then also then getting down to the specifics of, you know, who are they targeting?
Yeah, so some of the biggest ones that most people would know would be the National Democratic Redistricting Commission. This was formed by Barack Obama and Eric Holder, being the former attorney general for Barack Obama. And they organized themselves and submitted their application to the IRS, and that their purpose was to give Democrats the power of redrawing legislative and congressional district lines to favor Democrats. Today, they run with the moniker of, well, we just want fair districts.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to get their quote-unquote fair districts, they have been investing a ton of money trying to defeat Republicans and certainly supporting the far-left progressive liberal Democrats
in
that process.
Because the Governor Wolf, if the General Assembly is aligned with him, Wolf will be in the driver's seat on redrawing that map.
That is correct. And so this is why in 2018, the National Democratic Redistricting Commission spent $1.7 million in Pennsylvania, and they are beating the drum to spend significantly more here in 2020. You've got other usual suspects. Planned Parenthood is coming in pretty heavily. There are some more local organizations called one in particular called Fund for Change that is funded with what the left loves to demonize the right with, called dark money.
Mm-hmm.
It's undisclosed money coming from an organization called Pennsylvania Alliance, which is really run by the trial lawyers.
Aha, Pennsylvania's
and
litigation
yes,
industry.
That's right. And so they are proposing bringing in millions of dollars into and did so in 2018 as well. So they've demonstrated their desire for Democratic control in Pennsylvania. And we know, David and Rebecca know the power of the trial lawyers in Pennsylvania and why they are all in when it comes to elections.
Let's talk about some of the individuals who have been targeted by these powerful out-of-state forces.
Well, so in the House, we are talking about dozens of folks that are being targeted. What's important to understand is Pennsylvania is what they call a highly sorted state, meaning that Republicans tend to sort themselves with Republicans and Democrats with Democrats. So it's why when you look at a map, like a heat map of Pennsylvania,
yes,
a lot of red and then these little pockets of blue, one in the southeast, one in the west, and a couple smatters. Yes, pinpricks. And what that means is that most of your House and Senate races simply are not competitive because – frankly, if you live with a lot of Republicans, the chances of a Democrat are, and there's really no way to draw maps to be able to make, Clarion County or Tioga County, so a lot of our counties that are very rural,
yes,
into, a 50-50 Democrat-Republican split. So what that means is that in the House, there are really only about 10% of all of the seats that are competitive. We've identified 21 that are seriously competitive. 10 are Republican incumbents that are trying to hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Eight are Democrat incumbents that have some strong challenges. And then there are three open Republican seats.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this really, it's a smattering across the state. Like where we're sitting, I think right now, are very close to Representative Andrew Lewis's district. He's one of those that's in a very highly competitive district, and the left, all of those entities that, a dozen of them are really going after Andrew because they think he could be one that would be part of that flipping and turning the chamber blue. Another one of our friends, Valerie Gatiss, out in the Pittsburgh suburbs,
right,
is one that's being targeted by these organizations. And when we get to the Senate, there are fewer people, but of course, it's a much smaller body.
Yes. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from PMA. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. So I guess, Matt, let's take a look now at the Senate of Pennsylvania and the balance of power and the way the races are shaping up.
Yeah, so the Senate, 50 members. In 2018, Republicans enjoyed their highest margin in 70 years with a 34-16 majority. The Democrats took out six incumbent Republicans, so they moved that majority to 28-22, meaning that they only needed three seats in order to have the majority, because John Fetterman, the Democratic
lieutenant governor,
is that tie-breaking vote in the Senate. So a 25-25 split would allow them
to move to reorganize, and that Fetterman would provide the vote that would control of the chamber.
That's correct. But something happened this year that moved it not 28-22, but with Senator John Yudichek saying the Democratic Party has gone so far left for him that he had to become an independent, and he now caucuses with the Republicans.
It's interesting because Senator Yudichek he's a good guy. He's a very traditional hard hat. Union Democrat, that it's because he, you know, is a dedicated to a pro-production agenda. He wants jobs for working people, and that this influx of southeastern PA Democrats into his caucus, that they're all a bunch of radical greens that want to shut down the kind of industrial activity that his constituents depend on for their livelihoods, and that was what led him to leave the Democrat caucus. And as you point out, Matt, it made the attempt to take control of the chamber much more difficult for the D's.
There are only six competitive races out of the 25, and four are Republicans that are defending their seats, and two are Democrats. The two Democrats are out in western Pennsylvania, in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. And the Republicans are really all across the state. You've got two that are in central Pennsylvania, John DeSanto, who represents Harrisburg, the city of Harrisburg, Dauphin County, and Perry, part of Perry County. And then Senator Scott Martin, who represents all of the city of Lancaster and then the southern part of that county. And then you go all the way down to the southern part of our most southeastern part of our state in Delaware County that has been blowing very, very fast.
Yeah.
Senator Tom Killian is under siege. And then jump all the way to Erie, you got Dan Laughlin, who won a Senate race there 4 years ago. So those are all of the six competitive. It's 25% of that those that are up for re-election right now.
We've talked in the past about sort of the trends in Pennsylvania, you know, the sort of reddening of the west southwestern part of the state and the deeper blue in the eastern part of the state. It sounds like those races are mostly in those areas. Is that the case?
Yeah, that is the case. I mean, that's where Republicans see pickup opportunities out in western Pennsylvania. The two Senate races, Senator Jim Brewster and newly elected Senator Pam Iovino. Trump did very well in those districts
in
2016.
Won in Iovino's.
Yeah, and so that's where Republicans have been seeing their pickups is in western PA, while the Democrats are experiencing the same thing in southeastern PA.
You've seen Trump in particular do very well, and I would argue that it's likely the entire national election will come down to whether Joe Biden can win Lackawanna County.
I think those counties in northeastern Pennsylvania are the bellwether for the nation. And I think that you're right. They will make a huge difference in this upcoming election, both at the national and the state levels, too.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of shifting. And David, you certainly know this from what natural gas has done for Pennsylvania, that traditionally Democratic strongholds of the hard hat unions, as I know you like to call them, the people who make stuff, that they are definitely realizing that the Democratic policy agenda and their anti-energy positions, or their pro-dark positions, right?
Right.
yes. against fossil fuels is a real threat to their lives and their livelihoods. And so you're seeing that shift definitely out in the western part of Pennsylvania. And then even when you get to some of the social issues, whether it's abortion or Second Amendment, these folks tend to share those where right. they have a home in the Republican right. Party
right.
as well.
Right.
So question for, what do you think the sort of COVID response and the COVID policies and the Governor Wolf lockdown, what impact do you think that will have on some of these races?
That's an interesting question, because you wonder if Tom Wolf's actions impact other Democrats. I think you will see it in the mail. You'll see it on TV relative to how some of these Democrats have voted to keep things locked down, irrespective of the ability to open up safely. And so how that will impact other races, I'm not sure. But one thing that is certain is that this will be the very first election in Pennsylvania where voters have to vote for each individual candidate on the ballot. Pennsylvania, until this year, was one of only seven states that allowed for straight party tickets, so that you could go in and just push one button and say all Republican or all Democrat. We don't have that anymore. And so we'll see if people go in and say, well, I'm going to vote for the Republican president, but then I'm voting for a Democratic row office or a Republican state House member. People are going to have to go through that ballot. Every candidate gets individually evaluated by the voter rather than just straight party ticket voting. How that shakes out is going to be interesting to see.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this week's program. There's so much more to discuss, and maybe on the next show we can get to the row offices, the congressional races, and some of those other things. But for now, we'll just say thanks to everybody for listening. Matt, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
Yes, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
And Rebecca, what about you?
They can find us at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and Matt and me, thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. A dependence on the people is no doubt the primary control on the government, but experience has taught mankind the necessity of auxiliary precautions. Those words by James Madison framed his view that each branch of government must be held in check by the power of the other two branches. Thus was the concept of three co-equal branches of government enshrined in the U.S. Constitution and in the constitutions of the several states. Any pretense that the historic dynamic of checks and balances remains in Pennsylvania has now vanished. An activist state Supreme Court has repeatedly usurped the duties of the legislative branch and enabled the executive branch to exercise unfettered power. The High Court's latest foray into judicial activism could have national implications, and in a worst-case scenario, could plunge the country into an electoral crisis if the outcome of the presidential election hinges on this state's electoral votes. This is because the court has effectively rewritten the law governing the counting of mail-in ballots. The legislature passed, and the governor signed, a law requiring mail-in ballots to be received by the time the polls close on Election Day. Trampling on constitutionally passed legislation, the Supreme Court has decided to extend the counting of ballots to include those received up to 3 days after Election Day. Further, the court has decreed that such ballots must be counted even if they lack a postmark or the postmark is ineligible. This means ballots mailed in after Election Day must also be counted. Further opening the door to fraud, the court also made legal the placement of collection boxes in which ballots can be deposited, boxes with no security to ensure the legitimacy of the ballots placed therein. There was already ample reason to doubt both the efficiency and security of Pennsylvania's upcoming electoral process. The state has never experienced an election with a high number of mail-in ballots, which, by their very nature, have no chain of custody overseen by election officials. Any efforts to allow counties to begin at least opening those ballots prior to Election Day to speed up the counting process vanished when the Supreme Court's ruling poisoned the well for any legislative remedy. It was weeks after the June primary before the results of all races were known. It now appears the state is headed for a high-profile rerun of that scenario. And complicating matters further, most voters will be voting on new machines required by Governor Wolf, who demanded all systems have a paper backup. Various counties have experienced problems with these new systems, and more snafus are likely in November. As a result of all of this, it will be at least days, if not weeks, before we know the outcome of the presidential race in Pennsylvania. And a disputed outcome has the potential to place Penn's Woods in the same harsh national spotlight that shone upon Florida in the weeks after the 2000 presidential election. All of this is just the latest example of a Supreme Court gone rogue. Several months ago, the court subverted the legislative process by ruling that Governor Wolf could veto a bill designed to end his declaration of emergency over the COVID-19 pandemic that he has used to enact policies that have decimated the state's economy. The Supreme Court has been eviscerating the legislature ever since 2015, when an alliance of labor unions and left-leaning groups essentially purchased control of the court by pouring millions of dollars into electing three Democratic justices who have since ruled Pennsylvania by judicial decree. Shortly after they took to the bench in 2016, the judges stole the power of the legislature to draw congressional district lines. The ruling judicial junta then declared the legally enacted districts unconstitutional and put into place a new set of districts whose lines had been drawn by a California-based academic. No part of that process followed either legislature or constitutional guidelines. And so the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has essentially rendered the General Assembly powerless. That is, except for one power the legislature can and should effectively exercise, the power to impeach Supreme Court justices. It is true, impeachment should be used sparingly, but when one branch of government so blatantly oversteps its constitutional authority, and that branch is the one sworn to protect the Constitution, it leaves the legislature no choice but to impeach the offending justices. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville. All of them have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.